Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's August 3rd. 52 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City and almost a cloudless sky. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, I've got meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It is a great one out there if you love all the sunshine. Unfortunately for the rain lovers, we're not going to see much of that anymore. We continue today with sunny skies and we'll see a high of 78, so we can expect to see a slow but steady warm-up. Tonight, we continue that mostly clear sky cover and a low of 56. Wednesday, we're expecting to see once again another sunny day for us and a high of 83. Going into Wednesday, high pressure still dominates. We see clear skies and a low of 59. Going to Thursday, we do it all over again, but this time a bit warmer as we see more sunshine once again, a high of 87, and it will be a bit on the, I want to say, slightly breezy side. Thursday, we continue to see more clear skies overnight and a low of 61. Friday, we get that cold front that moves through. Luckily, it doesn't bring any rain, and it keeps us dry, but helps clear out the smoke that we continue to have funnel in from the west. And we'll see that we'll have a high of 78, so a little bit cooler also. We'll expect to see Friday night mostly clear skies with a low of 55. Saturday, we continue to see that we have temperatures slowly increasing once again under all of that sunshine. A high of 80 is expected. And going into Saturday night, very calm evening, mostly clear skies with a low of 57. Going into Sunday, we can expect to see another day in the 80s as we hang around with plenty of sunshine for us. The high will be 82. Sunday night, again, a very calm evening and overnight hours. So we expect to see mostly clear skies and a low of 58. Going into Monday, we continue to see plenty of sunshine in clear conditions, really keeping us on the nice and warm side as we see that we will have a high of 81 degrees for us. From the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo.
Hey, over to you, Leslie. Yeah, hey, before I let you go, the outlook then for the smoky skies and what, clearing, you said, by Friday?
Yes, so by Friday, we'll expect to see that cold front hopefully bringing in clearer air from the northwest and kind of just mixing all of that out of here. But unfortunately, until then, we still see a little bit more smoke hanging around.
Okay, thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up in just a minute, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, taking a look at Wednesday's County Council meeting, which includes a return of the Highland Flats project. Kimball Arts Center Executive Director Aldi Milliken and Events Manager Hilly Gilson in with details about the annual Arts Festival, of course, opening up on Main Street Friday. And then the Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox, with an update on some open space issues. Also, stay tuned. Coming up on This Green Earth right after the local news hour, today's guests include Eric Balkin, the executive director of the Glen Canyon Institute. He is covering the proposed Lake Powell pipeline, a multi-billion dollar, 140-mile pipeline project that could pump 86,000 acre-feet of water annually out of the Colorado River. Then climate scientist Mike Pilecki talks about climate normals. The National Center for Environmental Information updates these climate normals every 10 years. He'll help us understand what climate normals are, how they're calculated, and how this informs us what's happening with our climate now and what could happen in the future. Again, all of that happening up on This Green Earth right after the local news hour.
This is Randy Barton with The Local View. It is on the air here at KPCW, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Why wouldn't you listen? We give you everything you need. Great music. Oh, our playlist, so expansive and marvelous. Proud of it. Fabulous local news and information. You can delight others with your knowledge of local items, affairs, and events. Keep you up to date on the weather, on fires, traffic, everything about pandemic living here in a mountain town. Tune in.
It's 8:10 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Summit County Council will be meeting for the first time in a while at the Richens Building there in the Snyderville Basin. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
And I'm wondering, have you met there since the pandemic started?
We have met there. I think okay. We had one meeting approximately 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Okay. Well, starting at 2:30, we've got a work session with a discussion about combining the elected offices of county clerk and county auditor. Why are we thinking about doing this?
Well, I think back in about 2014, maybe a little bit earlier than that, this was last discussed by the council. We actually have 19 of the 29 counties in the state that have combined these offices for a lot of different reasons. But the reason that they, you know, if you're looking at combining offices in order to create some efficiencies, perhaps, these are logical because they keep separate still some of the things around taxing that need to be separate. The auditor is in charge of setting tax rates. So, you know, statutorily, they want to keep that function separate from those of the assessor and the recorder and the treasurer.
Okay, well, E-First just named to the office after Kent Jones retired, but not as an elected official. So are you thinking this is a good time then to do that before she gets into the election season?
Well, certainly the timing looks like that because of having a new clerk coming into the office. However, it has more to do with the fact that the auditor's office and the clerk's office will be up for election next year during the regular election season. And we wanted to, I think the council wanted to make sure that if they were going to combine these offices, that they did so well in advance of when people have to declare for those offices so that people know what they're what's available.
All right. So have you asked her? I mean, what does she think about the idea?
I've talked to her. I'm going to let Eve represent herself on that. And, you know, in my role, I can't really form an opinion about this either. It's really a job of the council in order to set up our county government.
Okay, there is a timeline here. We need to adopt something by February 2022, and then this would be decided by voters in an election then in November 2022?
Well, no. It is a decision of the county council whether to combine those officers or not. But then, you know, if they decide to do that and they budget for that combined offices in the next year, then that will be the only thing on the ballot, would be a combined clerk auditor. If not, then we'll still have an individual clerk and auditor elected next year.
All right. So the clerk's office budget reported at $638,000 for 3 full-time employees, 1 part-time staff member. The auditor's office has a budget of $378,000 for 3 full-time employees. Why is there such a huge difference there?
Well, I think the difference would be in what their duties are. Largely, you know, the clerk is responsible for running an election each year, and in some years that's a little larger even than that $600,000, depending on whether it's a federal election year or not. So that's probably the biggest difference, is how we run our elections.
So, do the offices then get combined as well? I mean, are we just losing one elected official here?
You would essentially lose one elected official. That is correct.
All right. So we would see a combined budget for about $1 million. And so the savings is in that one person?
Well, I don't know. You know, first of all, I don't think the reason to do this is because of savings necessarily. I think it's more about the efficiency of how we do our work. But given that, I don't think it's as simple to say that we would just combine those budgets and therefore there would be a budget of around $1 million. I think we'd go back during our budget process, given the council's direction, and look at all of the duties of that office and kind of rebuild that budget in order to know where it comes out. I think there would be some budget savings there, but again, I don't think that's the reason to do it. We want to make sure that all the statutory duties are covered.
All right. Let's see. At 3 o'clock, I believe, an hour is planned for a discussion regarding the Highland Flats General Plan Amendment and Rezone. This is for a proposed 410 multi and single family development on 16 acres there. Just that triangle parcel, if you would, near I-80 and US 40. Back in March, the Planning Commission gave a negative recommendation, saying that the proposal is inconsistent with the general plan mission statement, as well as the Highland Neighborhood Planning Area. It doesn't look like the staff has a recommendation here, huh?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's probably inappropriate for the staff to have a recommendation. I mean, they worked directly with the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission, as the advisor to the council on this type of project, now is the authority. So, I think the council will take the Planning Commission's recommendation into account. But as you know, they have the ability to relook at this and look at it a different way if they choose to. But you know, it will be judged on its merits.
So no formal action will be taken tomorrow, and a public hearing will be set in the future. Can you tell us if the development has made any changes since it was before the Planning Commission?
I really can't. I believe this is the same project that came in front of the Planning Commission. I think that's the way that we process things. And, you know, I think we just need to look at the discussion of the council now. Right now, yes, this is an introduction to the council about this project. There will be a further discussion as well as a public hearing held on this as the council goes through their deliberations.
Yeah, well, we certainly hear, it seems, on a nearly daily basis about the need for affordable units. The developer says no one else is proposing to build units at between the 30 to 50% average median income, which the county economic development director has said that is the most critical for Summit County. Does this affordability last forever if built? I mean, or can they move the number of units to more expensive units? I mean, is that somehow deed restricted in terms of what they're proposing, that it always stays that way?
My understanding is that these would be deed restricted units, and I'm not familiar with the intricacies of the deed restriction that's being proposed. You know, as we've heard the council deliberate other projects that have affordable units, they are going to dig into that issue deeply, as I would expect, if they're even interested in talking about this project. It is at this point a rezone. So, you know, that's the first thing that has to be decided, is whether the council wants to rezone this property from rural residential to something higher that could take some density. So I think that's what you're going to see the council center their discussion on.
All right. And then the developer's traffic report says that while traffic will increase, Highland Drive can accommodate it. Do the county's transportation planners agree with that?
I think we do. The road, Highland, the road that we're talking about has a lot of capacity. And I know that's not an opinion that probably the folks that live along or access their homes from Highland Drive like to hear, that it has capacity and it could support more traffic. That doesn't mean that that's going to be the driving factor, I think, or poor use of words there, but it's not going to be the deciding factor of whether this gets talked about and decided to rezone or not.
Yeah. So, again, you just mentioned it's an introduction to council. Are you looking for any directions? I mean, it's just whether or not, we want to hear more, or what is it that you want from council?
I think as we usually process these in front of council, this is really for the council to understand the project as proposed first, so that both staff and the developer get a chance to talk to the council about the project. And the council can ask any clarifying questions to understand what is in that packet first. And it may be that it takes us more than one meeting to get through that process, but this is the initial.
All right. Let's see. Summit County Library Director Dan Compton will be coming in on the local news hour Thursday to tell us more about the extended access hours program in Colville. So I'll wait to talk to him more about that. But does this need to come back to the council for final approval, or is this for a decision, or do they...
It does not. This has already been implemented. It's really just to update the council. You'll recall that we had to delay this project about a year because of COVID, and we're just excited to report on it.
All right. The county council does need to approve a contract with Scott Morrison to stay on as the general manager of Mountain Regional. So has it currently been a contracted position and becomes a permanent position, or?
No, it's the same kind of position as mine. It's just that we work under a contract for these types of leadership positions, as opposed, and we're still a full-time employee for the organization. It's just that we have a different relationship with the governing board since we work directly for them.
Okay. The contract is for 3 years. Is that how yours is done too? Just 3 years at a time?
It is. All of our positions that are solidified with a contract are 3 year terms.
Okay. And that's done just to, in case something needs to end, that you're not stuck on a limb for paying off?
I think mostly it's that, so that we're revisiting it on a regular basis. Certainly that, we're all appointed positions and at will. So, that our employment status can change if something changes at any time. But I think it's mostly so that we remember to relook at it on a regular basis.
All right. And then at 4:30, a discussion on the Certified Local Government Program History Digitization Project from County Historian Joe Frazier. Apparently, the county's CLG status has lapsed. Does that just mean that you need to re-up?
It is. It lapsed several years ago, and we've probably been lacking in applying for some funds, or really didn't have the types of projects that the funds that are available because of this certification would apply to. We're renewing that so that we can come into compliance. We are in the middle of, or at the beginning of, really a large project to get all of the county's collection digitized, and for two reasons. First of all, to reduce risk, because the way that those items are currently stored, a flood, a fire, something like that would put those things at risk. We want to make sure that we have them all archived properly, in a standard way, in a modern way, in a way that is consistent with how other archival efforts are going on around in history departments, and then so really we can offer that out to the greater community and anybody that's interested in that. So it's not just a visit to Colville that takes you closer to our history.
Okay, so it sounds like in order to be in compliance, you'll need to form a board of directors or something.
Yeah, we have to have a board associated with our ordinance, and we're going to do that in a very simple way at first. We'll probably have that board set up with staff members and maybe elected officials, and then we'll reanalyze that as the county gets more direction on what the county council wants to do with that board over time.
Okay, finally, council will be honoring Dr. Rich Bullo as he prepares to retire at the end of the month. You put, a resolution out in, hello?
Yes, it's a kind of a bittersweet item for me. I know we've known about Rich retiring for a long time now, and we've already named Dr. Bondurant as his replacement, but the day is coming, and a great and loyal comrade at the county, not only for the 6 years that I've been here, but he's been here 10 years. And of course, we worked very closely over the past 17 months on a very difficult project. So I'm sad to see Rich going. I'm really happy for him to get out and end his professional career and do some things that he's wanted to do for a long time. But we're going to honor him this week.
Okay, and he then continues on through the end of the month?
He does.
Just
yeah,
transitioning.
I think around the 20th of the month is when he'll finish up.
All right, and then how is the search for deputy director going?
Well, we've already hired Shelley Worley, who was an internal candidate for the deputy director, highly qualified, went through a rigorous process to be selected, and we're just thrilled that again we got to promote somebody from within that has the confidence of the director, my confidence, and the organization's confidence that she'll come in and start doing a good job.
Okay. And let's see, you also had some other positions out there to to fill? Where are we with those? Like the public lands manager and?
We have hired the public lands manager. You'll recall Jess Kirby, who has worked for Basin Rec doing some of their land management for the past few years, has come to the county and will be fulfilling that role. She really effectively starts about this week. She's been on vacation fulfilling something that she needed to do as she ended her employment with Basin Rec. But we're thrilled that she's going to come in and start helping us manage our lands, but also really start working on a newer project on watershed protection in the Weber watershed. That we believe is going to have a huge effect and a great partnership with the Forest Service and the state over the next few years.
Okay. And I think you had also a communications job, or was that already filled?
I think that one's already been filled, yeah.
Okay. Finally, at 6 o'clock, a public hearing and possible adoption of an ordinance that would amend the Eastern Summit County Development Code that regulates private campgrounds and seasonal recreational vehicle use. What's being proposed? Are we going to make some people unhappy here?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, we heard in our public in the past public hearing about this, about how there is a divide of folks and even between different neighborhoods up in the Uintas or developments there, that some want free access and multiple campers allowed on properties, and some don't. And a lot of it comes down to, you know, the same thing we deal with sometimes down in our regular subdivisions in the valley, where it's sometimes just too busy, and other health and safety reasons. So I think we're going to review that again, see what staff has come back with some revisions, and then we're going to hear from the public again.
Okay, because I was going to say most of those who turned out for a public hearing last spring were against the proposed ordinance, so you're hoping that the changes will accommodate their needs?
I would imagine. I mean, the council gave some direction the last time they talked about it. We'll see how the staff has reacted to that and then how the public reacts to it. You know, I think the council expressed that they need and want to do something, but they want to be sensitive to as many folks as they can.
Yeah, this is one of those issues that sounds like, ooh, it could head to the state legislature.
This is a tough one, and it does have ramifications beyond Summit County, because these types of impacts are being seen elsewhere.
Okay, Tom, anything else you wanted to mention?
That's all I've got today, except the county fair starts this week.
That's right. Tom, thank you.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. 8:30, 55 degrees again here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for sunshine and a high today of about 77. 55 degrees in Heber Valley, looking for sunshine and 87. Well, the Kimball Arts Festival kicks off Friday night after taking off a year. It's local nights, the festival continuing Saturday and Sunday on Park City's Main Street. In the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of the Kimball Arts Center, Aldo Milliken, and event manager Hillary Gilson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is officially, I guess, your first arts festival all day. Are you all set?
I am all set. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, we've been preparing for, you know, more than a year to make this happen. And so this is really exciting for me to see what all the buzz and hubbub is about.
All right. Well, certainly the festival attracts as many as 50,000 people over the 3 days. And certainly given the surge in COVID cases, should we be concerned?
Well, yeah, of course we should be concerned. And I think that's one of the elements that makes this arts festival successful, is that we are outdoors. So it is appropriate at this time to sort of appreciate that, you know, we thought a lot about spreading out our booths and making sure that people have more space so we're more able to socially distance even with the crowds. But yeah, being outside, I think, is really an important element to this, that people should feel safe in a beautiful and picturesque backdrop of Park City.
So does that mean that you've invited fewer artists in order to spread out, or you were just spreading out further on Main Street?
It does. So we've reduced our invited artists by about 10%, and that has thus reduced the footprint of the festival by about 10%. We've also taken moves to eliminate the beer garden at Miners Park, which is typically an area of congestion in the street. We've also reduced the amount of sponsor activations on the street, as well as food vendors and drink vendors as well.
All right. So are we talking about capping the number of people that come through the gate?
We have the capacity to do that, and that's why we're trying to encourage people to sign up online so we have a better account of our numbers. So people should really look on the website parkcitykimballartsfestival.org and register and sign up before you come to Park City. It'll really add to your experience. And I just wanted to also sort of add to what Hillary said. One of the things that we have done with the reduced footprint is really culled over the artists. So we're really looking for a better visitor experience. We've heard from our local population that there's maybe too many people coming to this event. So by reducing the number of artists, we're actually allowing more space for our audiences. We also have some really exciting collaborations this year. So we're adding so much to the visitor experience that I think will really not just be about COVID, but really about people's connection to art.
All right. Well, let's talk. Friday night, of course, is Locals Night, and that means that Summit County residents can get in for free, but they do need to pre-register, or otherwise you're not getting in?
Yeah, so pre-registration online is required for that event. That just really helps with the visitor experience at the gates itself. It also helps us verify your zip code to make sure that you are a Summit County resident. So yes, registration is required online in advance.
And we want people to not stand in line. We want people to look at art. And so by registering, literally 2 minutes before you come on Friday night, take that time, go to the website, and don't stand in a line. Stand in front of a piece of art and have a better experience.
Yeah, and what will they need to have with them? They'll have an e-ticket then?
Yeah, so you get a e-ticket on your cell phone that will just have a barcode. You can also print these out at home too if you don't use a smartphone. And then we just ask that you bring a driver's license or a utility bill, something that says that you have a residence in Summit County.
Okay. You've also decided not to offer a weekend wristband, but people will have to buy tickets
for
Saturday and Sunday.
How right, come? That's correct. Yeah, and that goes back to the ability for us to control the numbers and to really look to be accountable for those folks. And so we've reduced the ticket from $12 to $10. And actually, of course, for locals is free. But for Saturday and Sunday, a little bit of a ticket reduction. And then we're able to still manage the folks that are coming here.
Yeah, I do want to add to that we do have discounted ticket packages online for sale. Those are for sale until tomorrow at 5:00. So definitely if you guys haven't purchased your tickets online, please go to the KimballArtsFestival.org website and purchase those ticket packages, because we want our locals to be able to enjoy the festival at that same price. So.
Okay, so are we talking about 180 artists? Because it seems you have about 200, or we got about 190, so if it's 10%, yeah.
Yeah, Hillary, what's our normal?
So our normal number is 225, and we are at, I think as of this morning, 192.
So we are, that's the reduction. We also have some incredible other little VIP packages for folks who want to party like a local for Friday night. So we can expand upon the locals night and the local experience with a VIP access. And then party like a local event on Friday night, August 6th at Heber Avenue Spirit Garden. So that's also another activity that we're doing. We're doing these micro activities within the bigger Arts Fest.
Okay, so what is that other than just gives you access into the Spirit Garden?
Yeah, so this is basically our way to say thank you to the locals of Park City. I mean, we've all been through so much for the past year, and the locals here have just continued to support the Kimball Arts Center through thick and thin. So we really wanted to bolster the Locals Night experience. We'll have local bands programmed by Mountain Town Music. We'll have three local artists who have all graduated from our Young Artist Academy at the Kimball Arts Center. We'll also have some lounge furniture. We'll have a bar sponsored by High West and Roadhouse Brewery that's being served by Top Shelf, which we're really excited about to bring that professional element to our bars. Sorry, I would be remiss to not mention that we have an amazing opportunity drawing as well with packages that range from about $600 to $1,200 in value.
Okay, so what are those tickets going for then on Friday night for the VIP access?
Yeah, so everyone will be able to access this event, but we are selling these kind of party packages that are $50. Those packages include wristbands for the entire weekend, a limited edition hydro flask, either a wine cooler or a wine tumbler or a can cooler, some High West popcorn, and a free drink ticket.
And that's a collaboration with Gallery Mar, who I can see right across the street here. So it's kind of exciting to work with a lot of folks on Main Street. We're really trying to reach out to a lot of the businesses on Main Street. This is a collaboration with the Kimball Art Center and our former neighbors, on Main Street. So we want to make sure that we give a shout out to all those local businesses.
Okay. So when we're looking at the 192 artists, how many of them are Utah artists?
Utah artists, it's actually, I don't have that number off the top of my head. I want to say it's about 60. But for Summit County and Wasatch County, we have about 20 local artists. And that's something that we're really excited about, to be able to help bolster their sales and also to be an exporter of art, not just an importer.
Okay. Anything you're especially excited about?
I mean, We've got an interesting collaboration with Ballet West, I think, that I'm really excited about. It's sort of a pop-up intervention. This is something new for us. We're really trying to reach out to other creative nonprofits, and they came to us and wanted to do something together. Their season is going to start ramping up. So we're excited about that. We're just excited for our own education programs, actually. So we will be doing activities with our team, and then our curatorial team will be there also talking about a lot of our exhibitions and our exhibition programs. And once again, this event helps power all of the great creativity and activities that we have going on year-round at the Kimball Art Center off Kern. So it really is a way, this experience is a real way for us to sort of unify Main Street to our location on 1251 Kerns.
Okay. Major fundraiser for you too, right?
It really is. Yeah. I actually call it a really dynamic program that earns us a lot of income in a way that helps us power through the rest of the year. It's an experience that connects people to art and inspires folks. So that's our mission. So it's really a mission-related activity. Again, this is my first time, so I'm really excited to share it with everyone on Main Street.
Okay. And I guess we should just mention that some of the usuals, the children's area, live music, food along the street, all be available.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Mountaintop Music has got a great program for us. Do we have any other amazing collaborators? It's just so many things going on during this 3-day weekend.
Yeah, we're really excited about the lineup that Brian at Mountaintown Music has put together for us. We've really tried to be intentional about showcasing different cultural performance acts. So you're definitely going to see a very eclectic grouping of music at both the Wasatch Brew Pub stage and also at the Heber Avenue stage. And then as Aldi mentioned before, we are partnering with Ballet West this year. They will have a tent up at the Wasatch Brew Pub stage. They will also be doing pop-up performances at the Heber stage on Friday night and during the day on Saturday. So definitely swing by there and check them out, because they're going to have some incredible dancers.
Okay. And where are you on the volunteer need? I know I'm reading a PSA that you're still looking for them.
We are definitely still looking for volunteers. I think, as you know very well, this festival would not happen without our amazing volunteers. I think we're specifically looking for them at the gates to help us streamline the entry process. I think the kids area is still looking for some, but all of the shifts are really fun, and we have some really great swag bags that we put together from all of our partners. And also, if you volunteer for 3 shifts or more, you get a complimentary year-long Kimball membership, which also gives you discounts to all of our amazing education classes.
Okay.
Yeah, really, we can't encourage the volunteers enough. It's really a great way to get involved, and we're hoping that more people sign up this week and join us on Main Street.
Yeah. Do you think there's a shortage just due to some COVID concerns? Or?
I think there's always a last-minute push for volunteers. This will be my second festival that I've been going through, and I definitely saw it in 2019. I think, of course, there are some COVID concerns, but our numbers aren't looking so short that I'm particularly worried about it.
So. Okay. Aldi, where are we with the new building?
We're still garnering interest and getting people to understand really what we're trying to achieve in this project. Obviously, we're negotiating with the city. We're negotiating with our partners in Sundance. At this moment, I think for me, going through the Arts Fest and sort of understanding the ethos of Park City is really important to really understand what we're trying to achieve. Getting the new building open at 1251 Kearns was also really important. Really looking at ways in which audiences interact with art or engage in our programs. So there's actually been a lot of behind the scenes master planning projects that we've been doing. This is bringing community members together, bringing council members together, bringing city officials together, and of course our donor base and our board members and our staff members to really rally behind a singular mission, which is to build something dynamic for us. So we're still in, I call the listening and leading phase, doing a lot of listening and a lot of learning about what people really want to achieve, and then using my experience in building buildings for cultural organizations and bringing in other folks to really rally behind it. But listening and leading, I think, is really where we are right now.
So based on what you hear from the city, I mean, how realistic, I mean, how soon could a building happen?
We're determined to make a building. People want a timeline. I'm really looking at milestones. Is the Kimball ready to achieve success? I think yes, but we also need to do certain things like build a larger board, build our programs out, communicate clarity to folks. Instead of people thinking about the negatives, what are the positives that we're getting out of a culture district? And I think we need to start sort of changing the conversation a little bit away from these obstacles and into, wow, what can we achieve together? I'm still within, a five-year time, in my head, a five-year timeline. But for me, success means achieving milestones that are not related to time, but related to things that we really need to do as an organization.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention about the festival?
Obviously just want to see folks out there. We do have an amazing event with our artist in residence, Jorge Rojas, People of Corn, at 6:30 this Wednesday. It's a collaboration with Arte de Mexico, Utah Humanities, the PC Library, and Holy Cross Ministries. So check out that. And then we've got a lot of great things happening in our building down behind the Boneyard. So join us.
All right, Alde. Hillary, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:44. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, now on the phone with me with an update from the Summit Land Conservancy, I have Executive Director Cheryl Fox. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Let's start first with the conservation efforts of the Conservancy. The Mountain Spa Project there in Midway, you're moving forward with that?
We are moving forward with that. We had one more extension on our closing date. It was set to actually close today, but we needed just a little bit more time to get everything finalized. So we've got a little bit more breathing room. There are so many aspects to this conservation transaction that it really, and so many partners, that it takes a long time to get everything approved and perfected, mostly the water rights. So the state engineer did approve the change applications just last week. So that was good news for our project. And then the sellers agreed to give us just a little bit more time. So we hope to get that closed by the end of August or, the first half of September now.
Okay. Well, and the deal here is that there still will be some development there, but about 40 acres surrounding the development project will remain open?
That's right. So the interesting thing about this project is that the city of Midway really does want to have resort development because then they're able to maintain their resort city sales tax, which is an important revenue stream for them for the town. So the spa, the resort zone, the spa property already had a resort zone on the property, and what can be built in that resort zone is nearly unlimited. So in this situation, we have a spa business person, developer, who was willing to come in and say, we will limit the development of the spa, but we're still going to develop a spa. So, you know, these were the reasons that it made sense to a certain extent for the Summit Land Conservancy to get involved. But mostly, we wanted to help the city of Midway and the citizens of Midway to preserve the view corridors as you drive into town on either Bergie Lane or River Road. But this was a really expensive piece of property, and we had to find a lot of different partners who would come and help us out with that.
All right. Now, the protection of the Huntsville Monastery, what's the latest with that?
So we have had amazing fundraising success. Our friends up at the Ogden Valley Land Trust have been working in the community up there. And if all of the pledges come in, the people who've said they'd give some fairly significant funds, as well as a grant application that the Summit Land Conservancy put in, if all of those come in, we think we are done with the fundraising. But again, it's awkward to be in this situation, right? Because I can't say, woohoo, we're done, because pledges are just that. They're pledges, and grant applications are just applications. So we may not be done. I hope we will know, you know, in a few weeks. So then the next part of the process is working with the NRCS to finalize all of the due diligence that the NRCS needs and get that land conserved in a conservation easement.
All right. You also have an upcoming event known as Nature Bathing. Tell us about that.
That's right. So we have a number of free activities outdoors that we offer. They are limited to 20 people, and that's just in part because otherwise it's too many people in a big group. Nature Bathing will be happening on August 10th and 24th this month. This is where it's a meditative walk in nature. And the one on the 10th, I believe, is at Stevens Grove, and on the 24th up at the 9K Trail. And we do ask that people go onto our website, wesaveland.org, and sign up so that we know who's coming and we can reserve spots. But again, there's no charge to attend.
Okay, and you also have the Moonshine Adventure. What's that?
Yeah, we're excited about this one this month. So our moonshine adventures are things that we do in the dark and usually with partners because that's more fun. So in August, we are actually going to do a star watch on Marchant Meadows, which is out in Peoa, where it ought to be good and dark. And Clark Planetarium is going to come and talk to our participants a little bit about what we're seeing up there in the night sky.
Okay, and then one more hops hike before they're ready to harvest, huh?
That's right. So there's one last hike on August 16th, and we'll go out, and that's a Prospect Ridge hike to assess the hops and how they've been growing. I think the recent rain will be helpful for that. And then we just really start to watch the weather to see, you know, when it's going to be the right time to harvest those hops. If it gets too cold, if we get a freeze, it'll kind of wreck them. Well, it will wreck them. On the other hand, you know, if it dries out more and we don't get more rain, that could be a problem as well. So the harvest is always kind of last minute. We ask people who are interested in helping with that process to, again, go to wesaveland.org. There's a happenings tab. Click on the happenings tab and you can sign up for these activities. The harvest is a lot of fun. We go up on the mountains, we harvest the hops, we bring them back to the brew pub at the top of Main Street, and then we kind of all sit around, and you have to pull the cones off of they're called bines. It sounds like vines, but it's with a B. So we harvest them, we separate the cones from the bines, and the Wasatch Brew Pub very generously gives us lunch. So that's a fun morning.
Let's see. You've got a big fundraiser coming up this weekend. Are you sold out for Magic in the Meadow?
We are sold out for Magic in the Meadow. So we're excited about that. I know there's a lot going on this weekend. So I'm glad that people felt like they wanted to come out and help support the open spaces that, you know, have nurtured us through the last year and a half of this pandemic.
Okay. How much money are you looking to raise?
Our goal is $150,000.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck there. Anything else you wanted to mention?
There is one more thing. You know, we've had several incidents this summer of people sort of taking action on the open spaces that leave the rest of us kind of shaking our heads. So somebody decided to knock down a bunch of monument plants up on the 9K trail. Those are naturally occurring, and they're okay to be there, and I don't know why somebody would knock them over, but somebody knocked a bunch of those over. Somebody decided to take a can of spray paint to a trail on one of our other conservation easements. And then, as I think Laura Smith was talking about last week, somebody took some clipping shears to the fences on Osgathorpe Farm over in Round Valley. I like to think that this wasn't just random vandalism. I like to think that somebody probably had an idea that they were doing something useful in these situations. But it would be really great if people see something and they think, gosh, that shouldn't be there, or this should be done differently, that they call the Summit Land Conservancy or the Mountain Trails Foundation, find us online at wesaveland.org or Mountain Trails Foundation.org, and you know, check in with us before you just go ahead and take matters into your own hands, please.
What's a monument plant?
It's a great big tall plant. It has yellow flowers. It's tall, five or 6 feet tall. Most of the leaves are at the base, and then it sends up this big. It looks like a monument.
Okay. Yep. I know what you're talking about.
Uh huh.
Okay. Maybe they thought they. Free flowers or something for their wedding.
They were knocking them over. They weren't harvesting. Oh. Ah. They were harming the plant. So, not necessary.
Okay. All right, Cheryl, thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:53. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:54 now. Good morning. Taking a look at some local news now. Heber City Police Chief Dave Booth back on the job after city officials determined that an internal complaint against him was unsubstantiated. According to a statement from Heber City Mayor Colleen Potter, the claim against Booth could not be substantiated and was found to be baseless and without merit. Earlier this month, Heber City initiated an independent review by the Utah Department of Public Safety and Wasatch County Sheriff's Office regarding the complaint against Chief Booth. The review was part of a standard process used to assess internal allegations. Chief Booth was placed on temporary leave while the investigation commenced. In a statement last month announcing that Chief Booth has been placed on leave, Mayor Potter didn't specify what the complaint was or how long Booth had been on leave. The Utah Department of Public Safety and Wasatch County Sheriff's Office released their findings, and Chief Booth was cleared to return to work on Monday. Following the initial announcement about the investigation, Potter emphasized that all complaints are taken seriously, but the chief has never given a reason to question his competency and performance, a sentiment she echoed following the investigation's findings. In a statement, she wrote, quote, "He has earned admiration throughout Heber City and the Heber Valley as a competent, compassionate leader and is a substantive and contributing citizen. We are grateful for his contributions, both past and forthcoming." Potter also wrote that Heber City also believes in individual accountability and justice, regardless of position, office, or tenure within the organization. Booth's public service record includes more than 30 years in the Vernal, Park City, Summit County, and Heber Valley communities. He was the recipient of the 2019 Chief of the Year Award by the Utah Chiefs Association and has been Heber City's police chief since 2012. Newstime, 8:56. A man died in a car accident Sunday afternoon just south of Heber City in a location that has seen several accidents. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has more.
The accident on Highway 189 involved three cars, killing one person and leaving five others with non-life-threatening injuries. Law enforcement officials said they'd not yet identified the man's name, but believed him to have been around 40 years old. All five of those injured were hospitalized. The accident happened near the intersection of State Route 189 and 3000 Street, just south of the Heber Valley Airport. It was about a mile south of where three Heber City women died in a car accident June 7th. The man who died was driving a gray GMC pickup southbound toward Charleston when he crossed into oncoming traffic. His truck sideswiped a Ford pickup and then hit a Volvo SUV head-on, according to a report from the Utah Department of Public Safety. He was pronounced dead at the scene. A spokesperson for UDPS said it was still unknown why his truck crossed over. The accident happened at about 3:30 p.m., Utah Highway Patrol closed the highway road temporarily and diverted traffic through Midway and Charleston. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Hi, I'm Aaron from Esco Heating, AC, Plumbing, and Electrical, supporting KPCW. We can perform driveway boiler heating system service and heat tape installation for your roof. More info at 855-ESCO-NOW or escoutah.com. That's ESCO ESCO.
Well, the Park City School District will not be requiring students to wear masks. In fact, they can't. Schools welcoming back students Thursday, August 19th. In a letter published Sunday on the school district's website, Superintendent Jill Gilday said that students and school employees will be encouraged to wear face coverings, but they are not required. The same encouragement applies to all, regardless of vaccination status. Gilday told KPCW that this guidance follows the CDC recommendation for everyone in the K-12 setting this fall. It's also consistent with the Summit County Health Department's updated recommendations as of Saturday. Last May, the Utah State Legislature passed a bill prohibiting schools from requiring students wearing masks. The letter from Gilday also announced updated protocol for COVID-19 exposures. If a student is exposed, the family has three options for what to do. The student can self-quarantine, undergo daily testing, or wear a mask and remain at school if they remain symptom-free. If any school in the district has 30 or more active cases at once, there will be a test-to-stay event. That means that students would have to show a negative test to return to classes in person. Gilday says that school faculty and staff are not required to be vaccinated, and the district doesn't know how many of them are. She says that's being treated as a personal decision. Tomorrow, families can expect to receive an email with more details about the upcoming school year. KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning Edition and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City and Heber Valley Hospitals, part of Intermountain Healthcare, and the Red Ledges Community.
We've got 57 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Again, sunshine and 87 today. 49 is the overnight low. Sunny, actually I'm reading Heber City, 78 is expected high. Sunshine and 83 tomorrow. 87 is our warm day of the week with sunshine forecast through Sunday. In the Heber Valley, we've got 61 degrees with sunshine and a high of 87. 92 on Wednesday, up to 95 on Thursday, then cooling up just a bit for Friday and Saturday. Stay tuned now for headline news from National Public Radio. Then This Green Earth. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City at 91.7 and 88.1 FM in Summit County, 91.9 FM in Wasatch County. Stream us live on kpcw.org and the KPCW app, or ask your smart speaker to play KPCW Radio. It's 9 o'clock, time for news.